The headlines: Iran's defense ministry says a drone attack targeting one of its facilities in the central city of Isfahan has been thwarted. Israel is stepping up its crackdown on Palestinians following Friday's retaliatory shooting attack in occupied Al-Quds. And people hit the streets in Memphis to demand justice for Tyre Nicholas, a black man who was beaten to death by police officers. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's defense ministry says it has repelled a drone attack on one of its workshops in central Iran. In a statement, the ministry said the workshop located in the central city of Isfahan came under attack by three mini drones. It said one of the drones was hit by the air defense and the other two were caught in defense traps and blew up. It added that the unsuccessful attack did not cause any loss of life or any damage to the workshop. The ministry also noted that the attack didn't cause any disruption in the workshop's operations. Iran's president says friendly relations between Tehran and Baku have been based on strong cultural and historical ties. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in a phone call with his Azeri counterpart, Ilham Aliyev. Raisi pointed out that the governments of Tehran and Baku will not allow the ill-wishers to exploit friendly relations between the two countries. He was referring to a recent incident at the embassy of Azerbaijan Republic in Tehran, which resulted in the death of an Azeri diplomat. The president expressed the deepest condolences over the matter, noting that relevant authorities are following up on the case. For his part, Aliyev said the Friday incident was an unprecedented attack. He stressed that the Republic of Azerbaijan will not allow for disruption of Baku-Tehran relations under the pretext of such incidents. A 5.9 magnitude earthquake has struck in northwestern Iran, killing three people and injuring hundreds more. The quake hit the city of Koy in West Azerbaijan province late evening, and aftershocks continued for several hours. It left many buildings partially or totally destroyed. Relief operations are underway. Despite the cold weather, Iranian President's first vice president has ordered the mobilization of all possible resources to help the affected areas. Iran's Red Crescent says 417 tons of aid, including tents, blankets, and food, is on the way to the region. Just weeks ago, the region was also rattled by a 5.8 magnitude quake, which left hundreds injured. Iran sits astride boundaries of several major tectonic plates and experiences frequent seismic activity. Every year, food prices increase drastically in Yemen during the holy month of Ramadan due to the tightening of the blockade on Yemen by the Saudi-led coalition. This year, Yemenis want to experience a Ramadan free of blockade. Youssef Mari reports.
Yemenis are urging their government to take decisive action to end the Saudi-led blockade on Yemen before the month of Ramadan begins. Due to Saudi Arabia's strangling blockade, food, fuel, and gas prices increased drastically during the holy month. Here at the Al Sanaa market, where many Yemenis do their shopping, customers said they want their government to adopt measures that will resuscitate Yemen's economy and end the continuous price hikes.
The strangling blockade is why food prices are increasing. When prices increase, it makes life harder for business owners.
We ask our government to improve our ballistic missile capability because it is our missile capability that will break the siege.
According to Mohammed Miftah, who is an advisor to the president of Yemen's Salvation Government, the cabinet's main task is to keep Yemen's battered economy afloat in the midst of a brutal war.
The government's main task, given the current circumstances, is to provide essential services like electricity, water, and building roads so people can travel. It's true, prices remain high. However, in the near future, the government aims to provide services at a lower price. In general, the main cause of the surge in prices is the Saudi blockade.
Mohammed Miftah says, despite the surge in prices, the Saudi-led coalition's war on Yemen's economy is leading to nowhere.
The enemy was hoping to strangle Yemen's economy completely by preventing all fuel and gas from entering Yemen. We have successfully foiled this plan, and now fuel and gas are available, even though they're slightly overpriced. The important thing is that they're available, which is more important.
For the time being, the Yemeni government shows a willingness to engage in peaceful political dialogue to end the war. However, much of the public has lost hope in the peace process. Yemeni people are calling on the Salvation Government to break Saudi Arabia's siege on the country before the holy month of Ramadan. Sana'a has called on Riyadh to lift the blockade multiple times. The kingdom has so far refused the requests, which means Yemen's next option could be a military one. Yusuf Maori, Sana'a.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian man near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. The man was shot dead near the Kedemum settlement in east of Al-Qalqiya. Israeli media claim the Palestinian was in possession of a gun and suspicious of carrying out shooting operations. This as Israeli troops are on alert following two shooting operations in the occupied Al-Quds. The first incident happened on Friday when a Palestinian man killed seven settlers near a synagogue there. The second happened on Saturday when a 13-year-old Palestinian boy injured two Israelis. The incidents follow an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank that claimed the lives of nine Palestinians on Thursday. Israel is taking a range of escalatory measures in response to the shooting attacks in occupied Al-Quds. Those include making it easier for Israelis to obtain gun permits and encouraging those with licenses to carry their weapons. The regime also said that it will demolish the homes of suspected Palestinian attackers and revoke certain rights of their families, including their social security benefits. Israel has also promised new steps to expand illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military is also sending more troops into occupied Al-Quds. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had earlier pledged a, quote, strong, swift and precise response to the deadly shooting attacks. He said the regime is prepared for any scenario. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Muna Kandil, gave us more details about the Israeli attacks on the Palestinians in occupied Al-Quds.
18-year-old Karam Suleiman from the village of Qusin, west Nablus, was shot dead by the Israeli forces as he clashed with the Israeli forces near the illegal settlement of Kedumim, east Qalqilia. It seems that Palestinians know very well that a reaction to the ongoing and non-stop Israeli illegal practices and policies and crimes, then they are left with nothing but to be adherent to the choice of resistance. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last night convened a meeting for the security cabinet, and after this meeting, they decided a number of issues. Netanyahu promised a strong, swift and precise response in the wake of the operation that was carried out by Palestinian Khayri Alqam, 21-year-old from Al-Quds, that left seven Israelis killed and a number of others were wounded. It's the deadliest operation in years, according to the Israeli military.
Tens of thousands of Israelis have hit the streets of Tel Aviv for the fourth consecutive week to protest against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's judicial reforms. Protesters chanted slogans and held banners depicting Netanyahu and his ministers. They expressed their disapproval of what they call a fascist cabinet and its proposed reforms meant to increase political power. Israeli cabinet says the reforms are needed to curb the overreach by activist judges, and that has drawn fierce opposition from groups, including lawyers. Netanyahu returned to power as the head of the coalition with extreme right and ultra-Orthodox parties. The cabinet is planning to hand over more powers to lawmakers in appointing judges and overriding the rulings of the regime's apex court. The coalition also intends to intensify the expansionist policy with more settlement units in the occupied West Bank. The U.S. city of Memphis has disbanded the special police unit whose officers fatally beat a young black man. The Memphis Police Department said it was in the best interest of all to permanently deactivate the unit. That came after protesters took to the streets in Memphis and other U.S. cities. They demanded justice for the death of Tyre Nicholas after a video was released showing police violently assaulting the young black man. He died a few days after this incident. The five officers involved in this incident have been charged with murder, assault, and kidnapping, amongst other charges. Police brutality against police and people of color has been a major source of public outcry in the U.S. This issue was most prominently thrown into the spotlight after the police killing of George Floyd in 2020. Our correspondent in Washington, Colin Campbell, tells us more about the growing outrage in the U.S. over police brutality, especially against minorities.
You are now hearing more calls for police reforms, for police culture to change, for the pathology to be diminished of these teams of police officers that seem to operate above the law. We do know that this Scorpion unit, the elite teams unit that was part of the police force that actually encountered Nichols, has now been disbanded. And this was about four teams of 10 police officers each that were specialized in auto theft incidents, high crime incidents, drugs, things like that. These teams have been disbanded. Now, what does that mean as far as the implications for crime in Memphis, where crime can be high? I think a lot of people are questioning that now. However, this also helps to diminish some of the anger coming from the community, because it does seem like the police department is doing something about it.
Tens of thousands of public school teachers and staff have held a demonstration in Portugal's capital, Lisbon, calling for higher wages and better working conditions. Police estimated that 80,000 people took part in the rally. The protesters demanded that the government increase their wages by at least 180 euros a month and speed up career progression. Teachers complained that because of career freezes in the past, they are the lowest paid civil servants. They say their situation has worsened after a recent spike in inflation to a 30-year high. Since early December, teachers and other staff across the country have been on strike, closing many schools and leaving students with no classes to attend. The UK's biggest police service is under fire again over allegations that it is doing little to ensure citizens are safe from its own staff. This comes after the arrest of a serving police officer who raped and sexually assaulted multiple women over two decades and got away with it. Calls for the force to be reformed or disbanded are growing louder. Said Purza reports.
The memory of the rape and murder of pedestrian Sarah Everard in 2020 by then Metropolitan Police Officer Wayne Cousins is seared on everybody's mind here. The police commissioner at the time, Cressida Dick, called it a case of a few bad apples in the force and promised action to weed them out. She was soon forced to resign, leaving a police force in crisis. The latest scandal to rock the Met, David Carrick, an officer from the same unit as Wayne Cousins, pleading guilty to tens of offenses, including rape against 12 women over nearly two decades. The response from the new commissioner, Mark Rowley, an apology and the promise of a cleanup. Yet critics of the Metropolitan Police Force say they don't think that will solve the problem.
I think the proposition that it's just a few bad apples has been blown completely out the water. What we have in reality is a deeply systemized culture of misogyny and racism that speaks and exists at the very heart, the core of the Metropolitan Police Service. It is beyond reform. It is beyond saving.
The Force Commissioner Rowley Commands was placed under special measures last year after revelations of bullying, racial discrimination, and misogyny among some of its officers against people inside and outside the force. New anonymous revelations from serving police officers speak of a culture of racism and sexual abuse in the force, which has left some black staff suicidal.
The issue is that systematized culture actually targets and alienates black and ethnic minority officers. And that has a profound impact upon their family life, their mental health, their physical health. And we've seen examples, haven't we, time and time again, of black officers suffering life-changing, transforming trauma as a consequence of facing racism in the Met.
These are dark days for Britain's largest police force, with confidence in policing already at an all-time low. And the recent admission by one of its own will worsen trust in the people who are supposed to be protecting society. Cyper is up, London.
In Italy, polls are revealing an increasing number of people who oppose supplying Kiev with more weapons. Italians feel the Ukraine conflict is distant from them, and they're calling for a peaceful solution to a war that is gravely impacting their country and Europe as a whole. Max Civilli reports.
Latest surveys are indicating that more and more people in Italy are against continuing to send weapons to Kiev and are calling for a peaceful settlement of the conflict in Ukraine. According to a Euromedia poll, over half of Italians, about 52%, oppose supplying Ukraine with modern Western-made weapons, up several percentage points from mid-December. Furthermore, almost 7 out of 10 respondents were also against a possible intervention of NATO in the conflict. After weeks of doubts, Italy has confirmed it is ready to supply Ukraine with its highly costly SAMP-T air defense system. Italy only has 5 SAMP-T batteries, which has led to concerns over the weakening of the country's defense capability. Also, other polls show a growing opposition among Italians to an even more active role by the Giorgia Meloni government in the conflict. According to a survey commissioned by the state broadcaster RAI, an overwhelming majority of Italians, almost 80%, believe that the Ukraine conflict is far away from them. Another survey carried out by market research company SWG has revealed over half of Italian citizens oppose the government's plans to raise defense spending to 2% of GDP by 2028. Doing so would align the country with NATO's desired threshold. Italy's next aid and military package to Ukraine is to be announced by the Meloni government in the early days of February. Max Civilli, Rome.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Little about yourself.
Amerik Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners, special. In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, January 29th, 2023. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world. Here we've received reception reports from Tarek from Bangladesh, Nico Genoves from Italy, and Klaus Huber from Germany. So Tarek, Nico, and Klaus, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read your emails. From India, we've received an email from SM Najim. From Bangladesh, we've received an email from Muhammad Tasliuddin. From Austria, we have an email from Harald Seuss, one of our old and regular listeners. Heikki Puranen, one of our old listeners from Finland, has sent us an email. But the last, but not the least, is an email from Ratan Kumar Pal, one of our old and regular listeners from India. So, after a short break, I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. So, as I said, SM Najam from India has sent us an email. Let's see what SM says. Dear friends of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. I have been a shortwave listener since long and DXing also. Now I follow your web program on social media. I follow IRIB because it is our third eye to see and feel the Islamic Republic of Iran's history, arts, and culture, people, places, and travel destinations. IRIB is my one and only source to gather information about the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB's programs are up to date, to the point, well discussed, and well analyzed, which gives me a true picture of Iran and its point of view on various national and international issues, events, etc. I'm very interested to know more about your country. That's why I am a fan of IRIB and its website, which gives me a lot of information about your country. We have taken the decision to hold a listeners' conference and DXing exhibition in our area. In this conference, we will invite local people and will request them to listen and follow the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting and your program. Hope the conference will be helpful to increase the listeners and followers of IRIB. Salam and warmest greetings to you, SM Najam from India. And please accept our warm appreciations and gratitude to you and your team for writing this email. Thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. As you said, IRIB is the most reliable source of getting information about the Islamic Republic of Iran's development. Thank you. Thank you very much for your support and commitment to our radio. We wish you all the best for you and your team, SM Najm from India. And of course, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And Heikki Pranen from Finland, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Heikki says, "Dear friends, I had the pleasure of listening to you broadcast at 20:57, your local time, on medium wave. The reception was very good. Good signal strength, a very slight interference from the unidentified radio station. A very slight noise, but no propagation disturbance. Almost like to listen to the local radio station. I enclosed the MP3 sound file recorded during the listening. Please listen to the clip and kindly verify my reception." Salam and warm greetings to you, Heikki Pranen. This greeting comes from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I do send my appreciations to you for this email. Thank you for letting us know your views about the quality of the programs. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you with other emails from around the world. Please stay with us. Welcome back. From Bangladesh, we've received an email from Muhammad Tasliuddin. Muhammad says, "I am a regular listener of your radio station. Thank you for your cooperation and friendship. I send you my warmest greetings. I like your very nice culture. Thank you for your programs. The radio is my life. Please send me a few items representing your radio." Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Muhammad Tasliuddin from Bangladesh, and please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations for sending this email to us. And thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our electronic QSL as verification. For the time being, we cannot send you the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio because we are in the time of pandemic. So, for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL as a kind of souvenir from our radio. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Muhammad Tasliuddin from Bangladesh. And from Austria, we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Harald Seuss. Harald says, "Dear staff of the English department of IRIB, I could listen into your service shortwave. If you have the possibility to send me a QSL card about this transmission, I would be very happy. Thank you a lot, and sending you best greetings from Austria, your listener, Harald Seuss." Salam and greetings to you, and thank you very much for this email. Of course, we sent electronic QSL to all our listeners as verification. Thank you again, Harald Seuss. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program, your program. And again, from India, we've received an email from Ratan Kumar Paul, one of our old and regular listeners. Ratan Kumar says, "Dear friends, I am a regular listener of your station from West Bengal, India. I always enjoy listening to your programs and sending my reception report. Please verify my reception report with your printed QSL cards or EQSL and send some promotional items for me. Thank you. Salam and greetings to you." And thank you very much for this email, Ratan Kumar Paul. Thank you for your commitment to IRIB English Radio. And as you may know, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our great listeners around the world at the time of pandemic is not possible. So, at the time being, please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Ratan Kumar Paul from India, we wish you all the best. And we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Thank you again. And here we come to the end of our program. But before saying goodbye, I do send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Tarek from Bangladesh, Nico Genovis from Italy, Klaus Huber from Germany, Muhammad Tasliuddin from Bangladesh, Ratan Kumar Paul from India, Harald Seuss from Austria, S.M. Najem from India, and Heikki Puranen from Finland. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The death of seven Israelis at a synagogue at the hands of a Palestinian, and in less than 24 hours, another shooting incident resulting in the injury of two Israelis. These incidents may have come as a shock to many, but it falls pale to the number of Palestinians that have been killed at the hands of the Israeli regime. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at Israel's security failure, the rise of grassroots Palestinians against the Israeli regime, and whether this new cabinet can even last what appears to be a wave of Palestinian resistance, including Israel's internal crisis with its own people. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Fra Hughes, author and director of Palestine Aid Belfast, joins us from Belfast. Also joining us is Arnold August, author and journalist, who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to you. But Fra Hughes, first to you. So you have seven Israelis that were killed. 21 years old is the age of the person, or the Palestinian who did that. And then in less than 24 hours, you have another two that were injured in a shooting incident. This one was carried out by a 13-year-old. I'm mentioning the age because it's significant in the follow-up questions that I'm going to ask. What's your reaction to what has occurred, first of all?
Well, I think if we put things in context, that you've seen last year in 2022, 150 Palestinians were killed, murdered, some were already executed by the Israeli illegal occupation in the West Bank. And already in January and the first month of 2023, we have had up to 40 Palestinians, some were already executed, along with many, many more injured. I think if you look back at the history of the occupation, which is illegal, if you look at the 1 million illegal Zionist Israeli Jewish settlers in the West Bank. This is in contravention of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which states that Israel, as an occupying force, illegally occupying force, should not move its civilian population into the occupied territories. Indeed, in 2002 in Jenin, you had this refugee camp filled with refugees from 1948, when Israel, the Israeli state, was born in bloodshed by terrorism, by many of the people who went on to become the leaders of Israel at that time, were brought by the British government as terrorists. In 2002, you had 52 people murdered in Jenin by the illegal Zionist occupation forces. So there is a history going back to 1948 and the Nakba. There's a history going back to 1967 and the illegal occupation of the West Bank, of the continued ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from their land and from their homes. While Israeli settlers build homes illegally on land that has been confiscated or stolen or illegally occupied by the settler movement, they have stolen water resources, they have stolen arable land, and they have occupied the homes of the indigenous population. So when we see heavily armed troops going into Jenin, a refugee camp, in order to summarily arrest and or execute people, you know, you're going to have resistance to this oppression. And Palestinians, under international law, can use any and all means of resistance against this illegal occupation. And with the new right-wing Israeli government heavily kind of indebted to the settler movement, right, and getting a lot of their votes and a lot of their political value from the settler movement, I'm not surprised settlers have faced the brunt of Palestinian resistance.
Yeah, point well taken. I mean, if you want to take a look at this, Arnold August, what our guest there said, obviously there's a history there of the way that Palestinians have been violated in so many words. I mean, from the deaths to the detainment to all the core issues that exist. I mean, we can go through, we can't because we don't have the time, but so many ways that they have been violated. So many are not shocked at what has happened. And that is one of the most interesting points, because even Israelis, in terms of the outpouring, if you want to gauge even social media, even though they regret what has happened, but they're not really that shocked as they should be, because Israel has violated Palestinian rights so much, especially with the most recent massacre that occurred in Jenin refugee camp. So wasn't this a natural occurrence, as the Palestinian resistance groups have said, to occur? And this being based on what happened in Jenin with that massacre of the 10 Palestinians?
Yeah, thank you for having me. And both what you said and what Fred just mentioned as well, I think we're pointing to a very important scenario or analysis, and that is the resistance in Palestine is developing, has been developing for some time. And I guess this is one of the reasons that Israel tries to intimidate the Palestinian resistance, for example, what they did in Jenin. And I would like to say we're not alone in thinking that. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of the Global Gathering in support of the Palestinian resistance, and they just issue a very powerful statement only a few hours ago in which they say that this, they fully support the attack against the Israelis in Jerusalem, and is part of this wave of further development of Palestinian resistance using armed struggle. It is their only way. How else can Palestinians defend themselves if it is not for armed struggle? And I think that we are heading in that direction. And it's interesting that, as you mentioned, the reaction from the ground in Israel is not as powerful against this act by the Palestinians as it normally is. But I think it's one thing is clear, that Jerusalem is occupied by United States and Israel. And according to all laws and norms internationally, an occupied people have a right to resist. And this is what happened in Jerusalem yesterday. They had a right to resist. Of course, this is being, well, the United States, of course, their spokesman, Blinken, and others from the State Department, they didn't blink an eye. Sorry for the pun. They didn't blink an eye. They called it a terrorist organization, while at the same time saying, well, we don't have all the facts, what happened in Jerusalem yesterday. We know the facts. The main fact is that Israel, as an arm of the United States, has been carrying on this terrorist activity, as Fra just mentioned, for many years. We're talking about decades. And it is bound to erupt as it has in Jerusalem today, and who knows what will happen again. In fact, there was another attack only a few hours ago. So this is building up, and the armed resistance is building up. And the support of the Islamic Republic of Iran is very important for the morale and also armaments for the Palestinian resistance. This has to come to an end. We are in a stage where no one can turn a blind eye to the massacres, or I would say genocide, ongoing genocide by the Israeli Zionist entity against the Palestinian people.
Okay. Well, I just checked before I asked, I was going to ask you this question, Fra Hughes, as to whether there was an outcome from the cabinet meeting that Netanyahu has held. So far, there's no news on that. And the reason why I'm bringing this topic up is because based on the source of an Israeli journalist and commentator who worked for Israel's Channel 13 News, he has said that the recommendations by Prime Minister Netanyahu will be for a law to deport families of terrorists, in reference to the Palestinians, immediate sealing of terrorist homes, arresting family members and friends, and then sending out reinforcements to the occupied West Bank. And then the last one, which we're going to get into later, approving more gun licenses to the civilian population of Israel. Now, that's really important, and I don't want to have you address this now, because I'm going to ask the question later. But it does not sound appropriate to the degree of violence that you would expect from this cabinet. It almost sounds like they're somewhat intimidated. The tone of what's being proposed is not that extreme, if I may use that word, unless that's a incorrect interpretation of what's being proposed. Because one would think they would you would think things like, let's go to the terrorists, let's go to the Palestinian homes and get rid of Palestinians, etc. But it doesn't have that type of a tone to it. Am I reading this correctly, first of all?
I'm not sure. I think it's a very extreme reaction. I know over the years it has been Israeli policy, or has been in the past, to knock down the homes of the people who are involved in resistance and in resistance operations, and indeed to knock down maybe the homes either side or parallel to the home of the Palestinian resistance fighter. I mean, this is actually you know, a punitive revenge and retribution upon the community. This is collective punishment against individual acts. I heard the father of the martyr yesterday, who was involved in the operation in Al-Quds, say that he was unaware that his son was perhaps a member of any paramilitary resistance organization. He stated that, you know, everyone has a different view on the occupation and how to resist that, or how to kind of rebel against what the occupation is doing. So, you know, these community kind of repercussions where you knock down the home of the family. Indeed, it's the first time I've heard of Israel threatening to deport the families. I mean, are they going to deport them to Jordan? Are they going to deport them to Gaza, which is more likely? This is a form of continued ethnic cleansing, a continuation of the Nakba. I mean, if you have an intifada, for example, in the West Bank, and you have tens of thousands of young men, teenage boys, engaged in throwing bricks and bottles at armoured vehicles that can do absolutely no damage to them. When you look at the nine people who were martyred in Jenin, you know, the Israeli army was claiming that there was a gun battle, but no Israeli troops have been injured. So, I mean, where are the guns? Where are the weapons? Where is the video camera surveillance? Because drones were involved and missiles were involved. And I read that their initial raid, that they came in a refrigerated van, in a civilian van, surrounded a house and fired missiles at it. So this is the response of the Israeli offensive forces, is to surround, attack. And apparently there were four people found dead in that building once the Israeli forces withdrew.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
What do you think, Arnold August, about these recommendations that supposedly is going to be brought up in this cabinet meeting? Again, this is not confirmed yet, but our guest there, and rightly so, says that these are pretty severe and extreme, because some of the comments that I'm reading now on social media are actually pointing towards that, saying they're ethnic cleansing, just like our guest Frau Hughes there said. Because, for example, law for deporting families of terrorists, again, as Israel sees them, or immediate sealing of terrorist homes, or arresting family members and friends, these are all pretty severe, based on the viewpoint. Do you agree with that, that the steps taken are severe? Because it also points to the extinguishing the Palestinian existence off the land, in a sense.
Yes, it is a very serious set of actions that the Israeli government is considering. But I think if they do that, it will backfire, because the Israelis know, whether they admit it or not, but the resistance, armed resistance, for example, supported in to a large extent by Iran. And the resistance on the ground has been building up for several months now. And I like to, you know, the United States and Israel may be in for a surprise. I like to quote from the my board, in which I'm a member, and they say openly that the person who carried that out in Jerusalem, Kari Al-Kam, is a young Magdisi resistance fighter who was breastfed with a Palestinian mother's milk. So here we go. While Israel is perhaps going to take some extreme action, the resistance, in my view, has never been stronger than it is now. And also the use of social media by the resistance. We often talk the social media used by United States or Israel, but the social media increasingly being used by the resistance is going to provide a further emphasis, a further impulse to the type of resistance that we're seeing, where the group gathering in Lebanon say openly, we have to use rifles, we have to use arms in order to overthrow the Zionist regime and head towards the liberation of Palestine. Uh-huh. So United States, they must be blustering, but there's the other side of the story as well. Increased development, the increased level of struggle based on any means necessary.
Well, this new phase, some have called it, Frahius, whether you agree or not, is my question to you, where you have these sole individuals, Palestinians, that is, who are emerging and acting on their own, even though they're carrying out pretty sophisticated operation, like what has happened in the past two incidents in the past 24 hours. Now, on the one hand, you have them so young. I mean, we're looking at 21-year-old and a 13-year-old that have carried it out. But it's somewhat spelling a new resistance, isn't it, in terms of the operation being carried out by them, because they have no affiliations with typical resistance groups like Islamic Jihad or Hamas. And one example, good example, I guess, would be a group by the name of Den of Lions that emerged in August of 2022, where they acted against the Israeli regime. Are we looking at this being a more commonplace incidents of these Palestinians with no affiliations rising up on their own? And, of course, it's because they're being choked by the Israeli regime in terms of a variety of things that you're well aware of.
Well, I think one of the major dangers that you've just alluded to for the Israeli state and for the settler movement is that I'm sure there are many brave members of the resistance groups, but I'm sure there are many people who are the eyes and ears of the Israeli security forces, Shin Bet, etc., Mossad within the West Bank, who do watch the resistance groups, do watch the resistance fighters, do watch the commanders, and do inform on the resistance groups within the West Bank. So if you're going to have individuals and young people with absolutely no affiliations and be seen to be clean operatives, it'll be very difficult to stop these attacks going forward. And there's maybe two things I'd like to say. One of them is, I think it was Golda Meir who said that the old will die and the young will forget. Well, a 21-year-old Palestinian in Al-Quds did not forget, and a 13-year-old boy who apparently his brother has already been martyred by the Israeli illegal occupation. So if you're going to kill 16-year-old boys, you may well find their 13-year-old siblings coming forward demanding a pound of flesh. And it reminds me in many respects of the suicide bombings that happened in and around, I would guess, 2002 with what happened in Jenin. If you keep crushing a people, if you keep destroying their homes, stealing their futures, giving them nightmares instead of dreams of a peaceful future, people have nothing else to react with except their own lives. And if they're willing to submit their lives, to make a point and to fight the oppressive illegal regime that oppresses them and represses them, I think that's something that you'll see more of.
Well, taking a look at Israel right now as we speak, in terms of its occupying Palestine, the land of Palestine, there are protests that are happening, Arnold, August, and I mentioned that in the beginning in my question. You have Israelis that are out there protesting. Now, take a guess as to what they are protesting. Your options would be A, are they protesting how they're against this cabinet, taking laws in their own hand, wanting to reform what they call judiciary, which is under question in terms of it even being a judiciary, or B, it's because of what happened, which is one of the worst attacks. In the past 24 hours, you have 7 Israelis that were killed, some in serious condition, with another 2 in a span of 24 hours. Which do you think they're protesting?
Well, I didn't see the footage of that, nor did I have a chance to read the report.
I'll tell you what they're protesting. They're protesting about those laws. To them, though there's 7 Israelis that were killed in less than 24 hours, that to them is not even a concern, because for them, their concern is how Netanyahu... Arnold August, are you with us? Okay, good. Netanyahu is trying to take laws into its own hands to try to decrease or trying to favor laws to its own favor, trying to... reform laws to his own favor. Now, my question is, you have that on the one hand. You have Palestinians, young Palestinians with no affiliations rising up. You have the resistance groups at the same time. These are pulling this new cabinet apart in different directions. What are the chances of it surviving this?
Thank you for quoting that. It makes it very clear. So the people in Israel, occupied Palestine, who are demonstrating against the government, even though it may not be very clear, but if they're against the right-wing, very drastic attempts by the Netanyahu government against Palestine, it's very good that they are opposing it and in the streets to demonstrate against this genocidal policy. I'd like to make one comment. You mentioned some people who've been carrying it out these last actions in the last 2 days are not affiliated apparently with any other group. Well, I see this as a positive thing, because the organization of the armed resistance is no longer completely controlled, even though it is a good thing, by the formal resistance, that people are taking things in their own hands. Like 30 young people were killed in Palestine by Israel just in the month of January, and the month is not yet finished. So put yourself in the position of a young Palestinian. They have to fight back, and the only way is by armed resistance.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end it. We're fresh out of time. Arnold August there, author and journalist from Montreal. Thank you. And Fry Hughes, author and director of the Palestine Aid Belfast from Belfast. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mika Batakwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.